It's Kate, someone be late for my shift at Radio Shack. I was about to say good morning. Good morning. First of all, again, a shkoach to Aaron for the beautiful breakfast. What? All right, so we'll say today's daf is Nun Aleph. We're actually going to start on Nun Aleph, three lines down from the top. So if you remember again, from the phrase Umay Shna Temura. So if you remember again, it's somewhat of a complicated sugya, not terribly complicated, but remember the question that the Gemara is dealing with began at the top of Nun Amud Beis, four lines down from the top, where there was a Gemara, the Gemara quoted a question in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer wanted to know that according to the Mandam, who says that Par Yom HaKippurim is a Karban Yochid, can it create a temura, or is it not able to create a temura? So the Gemara then quoted a whole number of different variations of this and led the Gemara to a discussion about contrasting between zevach and temura. And the Gemara quoted there are certain things that can happen by zevach that can't happen by temura, certain things that can happen by temura that can't happen by zevach. So the Gemara is trying to identify what type of zevach it is, because zevach, remember, is a general, almost nondescript term for a carbon. So I was trying to understand what type of zevach are we referring to. So the Gemara now says over here, Umay Shna Temura. Now what the Gemara is asking over here is the following. The Gemara is asking that the Braisa doesn't refer to a general concept of Temura, to a general category of Temura. But yet, interestingly enough, by zevach, the Gemara was referring to a specific zevach, so why is Temura different? To which the Gemara answers, Shem Temura Achasi. Because when it comes to Temura, the truth is, the Gemara answers, there is a general category of Temura. Meaning, within Temura itself, there are not really gradations, there are not different categories of Temura. Temura is Temura is Temura. As opposed to, Shem Temura Zevach Achasi, Zevach Ika Bechar V'Ika Meiser. As opposed to Zevach, Rabbi says, what the Gemara is asking is, why doesn't the Gemara go into such depth trying to figure out what case of Temura we're dealing with, whereas the Gemara goes into such depth trying to understand what case of Zevach, what case of Karban we're dealing with, to which the Gemara answers very simply, because in Temura, there are not really different levels of Temura. Remember, again, Rabbi says, just to reorient everyone, Temura refers to when you swap a Karban, right? When you go ahead and you try to, you've sanctified an animal, you've tried to go ahead and now swap out that animal and use another animal in its stead. There is a penalty levied upon the individual for the carbon v'hayohu usmura so kodesh, that both animals become sanctified as a result of trying to tamper with the sanctification of a sacrificial animal. To which the Gemara essentially says that when it comes to temura, there's really only one category of temura. But yet when it comes to zevach, within the category of karbanos, although many karbanos, many sacrificial animals share similar qualities, there are certain outliers, like for example, bechor and meiser. So bechor is bechor behema, firstborn animal, or meiser behema. If you look at Rashi is, for example, top Rashi in the daf, bechor, kidushaso mirechem. So for example, when you have the bechor is sanctified from the womb of its mother. Now generally, we don't have a concept like this, like sacrifice. In order to make a karban kodesh, what do you have to do? Right? You have to say kodesh. Right, smicha comes later on. That's part of the actual sacrificial rites, but you actually have to actively designate the particular animal. To the point, I will say that there's an interesting discussion. We'll see this in some of the kachim masechtos. If you were to go ahead, b'shatova, your cow is pregnant, right? B'shatova. So what happens now? If you were to go ahead and say the animal that's in utero, it's an ola. So I will say, would that designation work? So it's a big machlokes. Why is it a big machlokes? Right? Oh, so excellent, because it's a more fundamental dispute as to when an animal is in its mother's womb, is that called a davar shabali olam or a davar shalom bali olam? Actually, we'll see it in Baba Kama also. Uber yerech imo, you were love yerech imo. How do you view a child in utero? This is not, by the way, just an animal child. This actually has ramifications for a human child as well. Is the child an extension of the mother? Is the child considered to be in existence yet? So it's not so poshet that you could sanctify an animal when it's in utero. Yet Rashi points out, Bechor, yet Bechor, firstborn animal, kiddusha samirechem. Ultimately, is sanctified even in utero. Bein b'tam, bein b'amum, whether it's blemished, whether it's complete. Ve'ein lo shum pigyon, d'chsiv be'i, ach Bechor shor lo sifte, o b'maiser behema, nami ksiv, lo yivaker bein tov l'ra, ama chal al b'amum, u pigyon ein lo. So we'll say the Gemara is just quoting over here that within Zevach, you have so many interesting subcategories. So whereas normally, again, in order to sanctify an animal or to vest it with Kiddusha, it has to be alive, it can't be a Baal Mum. And yet we see there are exceptions to that. Bechor, Maiser, Behema can be sanctified already in utero and will be sanctified even if they're a Baal Mum. That's why the Gemara has to try to understand what type of Zevach are we referring to when the Gemara is trying to make the comparison between Temura and Zevach. The Gemara goes by to Rav Sheshes. Adumokim le be'elo shel Aaron, lukma be'pesach. So we'll say now the Gemara goes back and says, according to Rav Sheshes, who wanted to suggest that the Zevach that the Gemara is referring to is the Ayol, is the ram of Aaron of Yom Kippur, why doesn't he go ahead and establish it as dealing with the Karban Pesach? After all, the Karban Pesach seems to satisfy all of the criteria we were looking for on Amud Beis. Number one, the Doches HaShab. So we'll say he's going back to our Pesachim days. Karban Pesach is Docha Shabbos, the Es Hatoma. Now, what does the Rabbah say? Karban Pesach is Docha Toma. This is what we learned. This, remember that if you have 51% of the Kehila of the congregation of Klal Yisrael in a state of Toma, so what is the halacha? The halacha is they could offer up. There is no one goes to Pesach Sheni. They could offer up the Karban Pesach literally on Pesach Rishon. So it's Docha Shabbos. It's Docha Toma. Va'oset Mura. And furthermore, it can create a situation of Temura, the Karban Yochidi, and obviously that would indicate that because it can make, because it can create a Temura situation, remember we saw this in Amud Beis, that the old communal Karbanos are not subject to Temura. Why are they not subject to Temura? Because in order to have a Temura situation, what do you have to have? The owner of the animal has to come along and swap out animal A and instead wants to replace with animal B. It only works in what type of situation? Where there is a defined owner of the carbon. But if something is a carbon seep or something is a communal sacrifice, it is not subject to the laws of Temura. So therefore, Rabbi said, the Gemara says like this, if you're looking for a case, if you're looking for a zebach, a sacrificial case, that is Docha Shabbos, it sets aside, meaning, remember that you offer even on Shabbos, bless you. If you offer it on Shabbos, you would or even offer it in certain circumstances in a state of Tumah, and it has the ability to create the Temura. So Rav Sheshes wanted to say the only carbon that satisfies those three criteria is the Ayol, the ram offering of Aaron, which is the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Rav says, not true. Why don't you bring Karban Pesach? Karban Pesach satisfies those three criteria as well. To which the Gemara says, Kasavar, it's also Temura Karban Yachid, Kasavar, Ein Shochtin HaPesach Ala Yachid. Oh, because Rav Sheshes apparently holds, most of you actually saw this in Pesachim, that you do not shecht a Karban Pesach for an individual. So because it is not shechted for an individual, because we must remember what we're looking for. We're looking for a Karban that on one hand is a Karban Yochid in that it has a defined owner, but on the other hand, what? Satisfies or serves the needs of a greater group, of a collective. So the Ayil of Aaron does that. The Karban Pesach does not, because again, it cannot be shechted for the Yochid. I v'nukme v'pesach sheni. So why don't you go ahead and instead, well, so remember, all we're trying to figure out is what carbon, what zevach we would be using for this zevach temura comparison. So why don't you establish it doing pesach sheni? So the Gemara says, 1 second, does pesach sheni really line up? Ni dachi toma. Both said, this is a very interesting shaila that we discussed actually in Pesachim. Of can you offer up pesach sheni in a state of tuma? Meaning, I both say, remember, we had the following situation. If obviously 51% of Klal Yisrael is tummy, so you offer up Pesach Rishon, regular Pesach, even in a state of Tuma. Even in a state of Tuma. If you have less than 51%, that means we don't look at the collective as being tummy, but instead it's only a group of individuals who are tummy. So what do you do? So people who are Tahor, People are ritually pure, offer up the regular Karma Pesach in its right time. And the people who are Tamei offer up the Karma Pesach again on Pesach Sheni. What happens now? What happens now if come Pesach Sheni, people are Tamei? So people are Tamei. So the Gemara says, does Pesach Sheni set aside the laws of Tumah? Amar li Rav Huna breeds Rav Yoshua, Lirava Vitana, Lirava Vitana, Maishna Pesach, the Karli Karban Yachid. So I'll say that the Gemara says, according to Rava in the town of the Brei, so why is Pesach different that it's called the Karban Yachid, and yet Chagiga is called the Karban Tzibur? So the Gemara says, Imishum da asi biknufya, Pesach nami asi biknufya. So maybe you'd be tempted to say the following. Carbon, so remember, carbon Chagiga is offered by individuals. Remember, we have this, again, all this is a review from Psachim. And Shkalim a little bit also. If you remember again, so what would happen whenever you'd come to the Beis HaMikdash during the three pilgrimage festivals of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkis? So let's say Karban Pesach. So you had to bring a Karban Pesach. But remember, Karban Pesach was consumed a la sova. It was eaten for dessert, right? That wasn't your primary meal. So what was your primary meal? What did you bring? What we call Shami Chagiga. Shami Chagiga. A Karban Chagiga. There was, I said, these were, remember, it's a shlamim, which means that the bulk of it was consumed by the owners. Part of it was consumed by the Kohanim, and a small part of it was burned on the Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, why is it that Shami Chagiga, that the Karban Chagiga is called the Karban Tzibur, and yet Pesach is not? So maybe you'll say it's because Shami Chagiga, Karban Chagiga, were offered up the Knufya. Knufya means a large gathering. That when they offered the Karban Chagiga, there were a large number of people in the Beis HaMikdash. So even though it was offered for individuals, but because it was offered in such a crowd, it's called the Karban Tzibur. Well, the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, Pesach Nami Asi Biknufya. Pesach is also offered in a group of people. So remember, we saw the beautiful Mishnah that described the process of offering up the Karban Pesach. They were split up into three groups. And again, there were massive numbers of people. So if that's the criteria for being called the Karban Tzibur, that there are a lot of people who are there offering the Karban, so then Pesach should also be. So the Gemara says, I Ika Pesach Sheni, Delo Asi Biknufya. No, you know why Pesach is not called the Karban Tzibur? Because it was a part of the framework of Pesach is Pesach Sheni. And Pesach Sheni was not offered with large throngs of people. Again, generally Pesach Sheni only had, again, I don't know historically how many people were actually offering Karban Pesach each and every year, but it was a relatively small segment of the population. So the Gemara says, Amrle, Imkein, Yehei Docha Sashabis of Esatoma. If that's the case, I will say, if that's the case, then why isn't Pesach Sheni Docha Shabbos and Docha Tuma? Amrali in. He said, yes, you're right. Kiman do Amar Dochi. We actually reflect the view of the opinion who says that it is Docha. I will say, listen to this. Disanya. Well, so now we're gonna actually quote. The Gemara is actually quoting, I believe it's a Gemara. Yeah, from Psachim. So I was gonna talk about again Pesach Sheni. Disanya. Pesach Sheni Docha Shabbos. So I will say the Gemara quotes a Braisa that says Pesach Sheni is Docha Shabbos, which means again, if the 15th of Iyar falls out on a Shabbos, you would offer up the Karban Pesach on Shabbos. However, Ve'eino Docha Es Atuma, but it's not Docha Tumah. I will say, what does that mean? What that means is if someone was Tame at the time of the 15th of Iyar, so what do they do? What do they do? No. Nothing. And when do they make up the Karban Pesach?
No.
That's it. There's obviously, again, there's no Pesach Shlishi. So if you are Tamei at the time of Pesach Sheni, you're out, and okay, hopefully next year you'll have a better mazel. That's the Tanakama. Rabbi Huda says, no, Af Docha Es Atuma. Rabbi Huda says, Pesach Sheni is even Docha Tuma. And I will say, so my time at the Tanakama, why does the Tanakama hold that Pesach Sheni is not Docha Tuma? See, he Tanakama will say, Amar Lecha, Mipnei Tuma Dachisu. So this is very interesting. The Tanakama will say, I don't understand. The whole point of Pesach Sheni was what? Was because this person couldn't offer up the Pesach Rishon because they were in a state of Tumah. Now we're going to suspend the laws of Tumah and allow them to do Pesach Sheni. But what the Tanakama is saying, essentially, if you're going to suspend the laws of Tumah, so then what?
Do the first one.
Obviously, the fact that he couldn't do the first one, and now he has to do a second one, indicates that we do not suspend the laws of personal Tumah by Karban Pesach. So if you couldn't do it by the Pesach Rishon, then what? Then you can't do it by the Pesach Sheni. Rabbi Huda says, Rabbi Huda will say, no. Pesach Sheni does override the laws of personal tumah. Why? Amr Kra, he'll say, the pasuk says, Kechol Chukas HaPesach Ya'asu Oso. Remember, the Torah says, by the Pesach Sheni, in accordance with all of the laws of the Pesach Rishon, you shall do it, Va'afilu Bituma. And even in a state of Tumah. So I'll say, interestingly enough, according to Rabbi Huda, he understands when the Torah says, you have to do the Pesach Sheni, in accordance with all of the laws of the Pesach Rishon, that means what? Even if you are Tumah at the time of the Pesach Sheni, you still have to offer up the carbon. HaTorah Hechzira Alav La'asosa Betara. The Torah, true, gives you a second chance to be able to go ahead and do the Pesach in a state of Tara. Lo Zocha. But if it didn't work out for you, Ya'asenu B'tumah, then you should do it in a state of Tumah. So what Rabbi Huda understands is that the Torah comes along and says, Kechol Chukas HaPesach Ya'asu Oso. When Pesach Sheni rolls around, you have to do it in accordance with all of the laws of Pesach Rishon. According to Rabbi Huda, what is he saying? Torah is saying, you have to get the job done. If you can get it done in a state of Tara, wonderful. If you can't get it done in a state of Tara, then what? You got to do it anyway. So fundamental dispute between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama. Again, we'll say, let's go with what everybody agrees on. What does everybody agree with? Everyone agrees that Pesach Sheni is Docha Shabbos. So if the 15th of Iyar falls out on a Shabbos, you will still offer up the Karban. The Shaila is Pesach Sheni Docha individual Tumah? Tanakhama says no, and his logic is what? His logic is, the whole reason you're in this boat to begin with is why? It's because of Tumah, right? Obviously then, Karban Pesach does not suspend the laws of individual Tumah. If Karban Pesach doesn't suspend the laws of individual Tumah by Pesach Rishon, it doesn't do so by Pesach Sheni. I'm sorry that you're Tumah now by Pesach Sheni, but you're out. You can't do it. Tanakhama says, no. The Torah goes out of its way to tell you that you have to get the job done by Pesach Sheni. You couldn't do it by Pesach Rishon, but Pesach Sheni, you got to do it even if what? Even if you're Tameh. So the Gemara says, Amud Beis, V'seifuk Lei. So this is now a new topic. So I'll just tell you, Jesse Yishno Halacha L'maisa. Well, actually, I'll tell you Halacha afterwards. So the Gemara says, "V'seifuk lei da'asher lo amarachmano mishalo who may be." So we'll say, what the Gemara now is going back now is talking about the question that Rabbi Elazar raised. So the Gemara is suggesting now that the par of the Kohen Gadol, remember there was a whole shaila about who the par of the Kohen Gadol serves. Is the par of the Kohen Gadol a personal offering of the Kohen Gadol? Is the par of the Kohen Gadol an offering on behalf of the Kohen Gadol and his fellow Kohanim, and therefore they are all shutfim, they are all partners in this par. So the Gemara now goes back and addresses that question. The Gemara says, "V'seifuk lei," we should learn out, because the pasuk says, "Da'asher lo." The pasuk says, "V'hikriv Aaron es haparachatas asher lo." Aaron offers up the chatos, the cow offering. That is his. What does that mean? That is his. Amarachmana mishalohu maybe. Well, so what does it mean? It means it's his, which means it comes from his own money and it's his own personal carbon. Rabbi said, which means what? That it is not a partnership with his fellow Kohanim. So the Gemara says, Disanya, listen to this. Disanya, the price that says the following. Asher lo, the pasuk says that the par is his. Mishalo hu mevi, below Mishal Tzibor. He brings ultimately this par from his own money. Also, again, the Kohen Gadol has to go ahead. So you also understand, by the way, the Kohen Gadol has a lot of out-of-pocket expenditures. Certain things that he has to pay for on his own, which, again, don't cry too much for the Kohen Gadol, because remember, one of the prerequisites of being the Kohen Gadol is what? You've got to be wealthy. And remember, again, even if you're not independently wealthy, remember, we don't look for wealth. What we look for is the individual who's most fit for the position. What happens? We saw this really. What happens if he's not independently wealthy? They make him wealthy, which is really, really quite amazing. So, okay, he's got to pay for the power. It's okay. So the Gemara says, Desanya asher lo, mishalohu mevi, velo mishal tzibor. He has to bring it of his own money and not of communal funds. Yochol lo yavi mishal tzibor, she'in ha tzibor miskaprin bo. So I would have said like this. Okay, I understand why he doesn't bring up communal funds. But also, remember, many things of the Yom Kippur service do come from communal funds. But what things come from communal funds? Those things that provide communal atonement. But I understand that the par is not there to provide communal atonement, therefore it shouldn't come from communal funds. But aval yavi mishal echav hakohanim, shari echav hakohanim miskafrim bo. But I might have thought, who has to chip in for the parabosai? His fellow brethren kohanim. Why? Because they are included in the kapara of the par. So I might have thought that again, his fellow kohanim have to chip in. Talmud lomar asher lo. Therefore, the Torah goes out of its way, Rabbi Osai, to use this phraseology of what? It has to be the par that is his. So his means what? It comes from his money and his money only. Yochol lo yovi vim hevi kasher. I might have thought, okay, maybe asher lo means what? That when the Torah brings the par, l'chatchila it should come from his money. But you know what? If a couple of other people want to chip in, right? If a couple of other people want, if he ends up bringing it from other people's money, b'di'evet, it's okay. Talmud lomar shuv asher lo. The Torah states no less than two times that what? It is the par asher lo. Again, remember, you see it in Vayikra tes zayin vav and Vayikra tes zayin yud aleph. V'hikriv aros parachatas asher lo. V'hikriv aros parachatas asher lo. So two times. The Torah goes out of its way to say it's his. Why does it come to state that it's his? Talmud lomar, shuv asher lo, shina hakosuv alav la'akev. So we'll say again, the Torah states asher lo twice to teach you what? That the power of Yom Kippur must come exclusively from the monies of the Kohen Gadol and not from communal funds. So we'll say again, that it won't come from communal funds, that's obvious. That's obvious. Why is that obvious? Why is that obvious? Because Lemaisa, this par does not provide communal atonement. So because it doesn't provide a communal atonement, it makes sense that it's not going to come from communal funds. But the Havamino is what? Who does it provide communal atonement for? For his fellow Kohanim. So I might have thought that they could contribute towards this par. Kamashmala, no, that even if they want to contribute, they may not contribute. Asher lo has to come exclusively from the monies of the coins. The one says, well, if that's the case, Ula ta'ameich, echav ha-Kohanim, So the Gemara raised an interesting question. So here's what we've established. One thing we've seen already before is in order to attain any level of atonement in a particular carbon, what must you have? What must you have? You must have an ownership interest in that carbon. Remember, we saw this by Shkolin. So remember again, why does everybody have to contribute to half shekel? Right? In order that everyone has a financial chilek in the carbon tumid. In the carbon talmud. So I think Gemara raises a very interesting question. So now you're here. There are two pieces of information that we know. Piece of information number one is who has to pay exclusively for the par? The Kohen Gadol. Point of information number two is who does the par atone for? The Kohen Gadol and his fellow Kohan. So Gemara says these two things, as they say in Latin, don't shtim. Right? Why don't they shtim? Because ultimately, if it's going to atone for his fellow Kohan, then what must they have? Some level of financial interest. But you're saying they can't have any level of financial interest because it has to solely come from the Kohen Gadol. So Gemara says, L'tamech, according to your reasoning, Echav HaKohanim, his fellow Kohanim, Ilav Dekanu Begavei, if they don't have a financial interest in this carbon, Hechi Mechapra Lehu, how can they receive any level of atonement? So the Gemara says, Ella, shiny begoza de Aron. This ownership, this Gaza means ownership. This ownership of Aron, Aron will say in this context just means the Kohen Gadol. This ownership of the Kohen Gadol is different. Is different. How is it different? Rabbi say, listen to this. The Afkare Rachmana Gabe Echav HaKohanim. Because the Gemara suggests that what? That what the Torah does is the Torah makes ownerless certain portions of Aaron's par. I will say, what does that mean? That essentially, what does it mean? It makes it hefker. The Torah conveys ownership of the par to his fellow Kohanim, even though what? Even though they have not actively contributed to establish a financial stake in the carbon. Well, say there is this concept that, remember, just like we have the concept of Hefker Beis Din Hefker, that all money comes under the purview of Beis Din. And therefore, again, Beis Din has the right to allocate ownership interests where they see fit. So if Beis Din could say Hefker Beis Din Hefker, so certainly you could say Hefker HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hefker. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses to allocate a portion of the coin's power to his fellow Kohanim, even though what? Even though what? Even though he didn't pay for it. So Gemara says, Hachanami. So okay, I will say there's different gears also as to whether or not you read Temura into this. Hachanami, Hachanami, shiny be Gaza da Aron, Da'afkri rachmana gabe echav ha-kohanim. So the Gemara over here is suggesting that it could also apply to Temura, but even if we leave Temura out of this discussion, what the Gemara is saying over here is that lemais, so again, that's how the par operates. That's why, interestingly enough, Rabosai going back, that's why the par is able on one hand to go ahead and be a karban yochid, is able to go ahead and be an individual sacrifice, but yet what? But yet provide kapara for the fellow kohanim. Why is it able to do both? Because on one hand, remember, why is it a karban yochid? Why is it a karban yochid? Because it comes exclusively from the funds of Aaron HaKohen. Therefore, again, from the Kohen Gadol, therefore it is a karban yochid. On the other hand, it has certain seaboard-like qualities in that what? In that it's able to atone for the fellow kohanim. But why is it able to do that? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu essentially allocated the fellow kohanim an ownership interest into this karban, even though they have no financial interest. So even though no financial interest, there is an allocation of ownership interest.
Am I citing a source for that, or simply Svara that it's got to be that way?
It's got to be that way, because again, there are two pieces of information that we know to be a fact. The fact is, it atones. Because remember, how do we know it atones for his fellow kohanim? Well, so we know that from where? From the previous Mishnah. Because remember the vidui that he recited over the par. The vidui he recited over the par was for himself and for his fellow kohanim, which means that this cow ultimately atones for himself, for his fellow. So we have these two pieces of information that we know. We know on one hand, asher lo, it's only from the Kohen Gadol and no one else. So that is an established fact. Only the Kohen Gadol is paying for the par. On the other hand, the vidui that is saying clearly indicates that the par atones for his fellow kohanim. So how do you reconcile these two pieces? Only one way. Although it's financially solely the property of the Kohen Gadol, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the kohanim ownership rights, not financial rights, but ownership rights to allow them to be atoned for in this par. I will say, just to tie up the Karban Pesach, please, just so you should know, we passed the Rambam Paskins. The Rambam Paskins, like the Tanakamo in the Braisa. So by Pesach Sheni, Rabosai, Pesach Sheni is Docha Shabbos, which means that even if the 15th of Iyar falls out on Shabbos, you can still offer it, but it is not Docha Tumah. It is not Docha Tumah, which means that if you have the bad muscle of once again being Tame at the time of Pesach Sheni, there's no remedy for you at that point. You'll just have to wait, hopefully be a little bit more vigilant next year. All right, Weiter, says the Mishnah. Everybody has your pictures. All right, you're going to need this for a little bit. Now we're talking about the Bosa. Remember, the exciting part about these Mishnah is this doesn't always happen this way in Gemara, but the exciting part about these Mishnah is they're in sequential order of the Avodo of Yom Kippur. So literally, we're being taken step by step, you know, with a couple of tangents, a couple of detours on the way, but the Mishnah is going step by step. So remember, the last thing we learned in the last Mishnah was what? That the Kohen Gadol was going ahead and getting the Ketores. Remember the last thing, what was the last Mishnah about? Remember? Chafina, right? So he's scooping up, however scooping is done. Right? He's scooping up the Ketores, he's emptied it into the ladle, and remember, he's walking again. What's in the left hand? Left hand.
No, the guitarist.
I wake up 5 o'clock in the morning every day. right, ladle in the left hand, coals in the right hand. Again, remember, simply because the coals are heavier. You need the stability of the right. And he's walking like, so now we're going to go into the next stage where he's walking and Kohen Gadol is walking in to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So take a look at the Mishnah. So he's walking in the Heichal. Ad shemagia lebein shtei haparochos. Also, we're going to discuss this now. The model that the Mishnah is at least at first refers to is a double curtain. A double curtain separating, again, what we call the Kodesh. Remember, again, the Kodesh is the Beis HaMikdash, the inside of the primary temple structure, which housed, again, the Mizbeach Hazav, the golden altar, the menorah, the Shulchan. And then the Gemara suggests that it was a double curtain that then separated from what we call the Kodesh to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The only thing in the Kodesh HaKadoshim ultimately is what? Is the Aron. So what would happen? He would walk, the Kohen Gadol would walk in the Heichal until he would get to the area of the double curtains. Hamavdilos ben Kodesh uben Kodesh HaKadoshim. And these two curtains separated between the Kodesh. You also remember, the Kodesh, just there are a couple of names in the same space. What we call the Kodesh is also called the Heichal. right? Same name for that. Same. This is an inside space. Because remember, again, Abosai, just if you have your Beis Hamikdash picture, if you have your Beis Hamikdash picture handy, so just so you see over here, or you have it over here. Okay, you have it in the Gemara also. So again, remember, if you have your Beis Hamikdash, so remember again, this structure over here. We normally call this whole compound the Beis Hamikdash structure, but the Beis Hamikdash itself, remember, the primary Beis Hamikdash is this structure in the back over here. The long part in the front that almost looks like top of the T, that's called the Ulam. That's called the Ulam. Again, remember, this is all roofed area. You went into the Ulam, and here you'd have this structure over here called the Heichal, also called the Kodesh. And again, in there is the menorah, is the mizbeach hazav, is the shulchan, and then you'd have, according to the Mishnah, a double curtain, which then separated the kodesh from the kodesh hakadoshim. So says the Mishnah. So you'd go ahead and you'd get to the coin would walk until the point of the curtains. Ubein hakodesh ubein hakadoshim ubeinehen ama, and the Mishnah suggests that there was an ama of space in between the two curtains. And now we'll discuss why that is. An ama of space in between the two curtains. Rabbi Yossi disagrees, and he says no. Lo hais Hashem ela paroches achos. No. There weren't two curtains. It was not a double curtain. There was one curtain. Ela paroches achos bilbat shne'emar v'hevdilo haparoches lochem bein hakodesh ubein kodesh hakodeshim. Because Moshe quotes the pasuk from Shmos, which you're going to read in a couple of weeks. But what does the Torah say? There was one curtain that separated between the kodesh and the kodesh hakodeshim. So Moshe, now what we're going to focus on at first is this fundamental dispute between Rabbi Yossi and the Tana Kama about the actual structure of the Beis Hamikdash. According to Tana Kama, there's a double curtain. According to Rabbi Yossi, there's one curtain. I've also said this is very important because this has ramifications as to how the Kohen Gadol enters into the Kodesh Kodesh. If there's one thing you've seen about Yom Kippur, it's what? Everything is scripted. And everything is scripted very carefully. How the Kohen walks, where he walks, as we're going to see, how quickly he walks. All these things are scripted. So this is not just an academic machlokes, it's very important. So now the Gemara says, Shapir ka'amalu Rabbi Yossi Rabbanan. Rabbi Yossi is saying good to the Rabbanan. I mean, Rabbosai, remember, the Rabbanan say that there are two curtains. Where did the Rabbanan get that from? We don't know that yet. But one thing we know for sure, which is what? Rabbi Yossi has got a pasuk. Rabbi Yossi's got a pasuk. It's right. It's an often a clear pasuk, an obvious pasuk that says what? That there's one curtain. So Shapir Kamerluhu Rabbi Yossi the Rabbanon. Right? Rabbi Yossi saying, go to the Rabbanon. The Rabbanon Amri Lecha. So how did the Rabbanon respond? So Rabbanon will say the following. Oh, I'm going to tell you why. Hani Mili B'Mishkam. Rabbi Yossi, where are you quoting a pasuk from? You're quoting a pasuk from Parshas Truma. Very nice. What is Parshas Truma talking about? So about the Mishkan. So in the Mishkan, there was one curtain. Hani Mili B'Mishkan. And by the way, when he says Mishkan, it's not just going to be Mishkan. Mishkan is also Mishkan and Mikdash Rishon. Yeah. And Mikdash Rishon. However, about the Mikdash Sheni, what are we talking about over here, said Rabban? What are we talking about? We're talking about the Second Temple. In Second Temple era, Kavan de la Havi Ama Traxin. Uba Mikdash Rishon Havi Dahavai. So we'll say, listen to this. So now the Gemara is going to suggest there are many distinctions between the first Beis Hamikdash and the second Beis Hamikdash. One of the distinctions was what we call the Amatraxin. I will say, if you look on the page I gave you, if you look on picture 106, in picture 106, you'll notice over here, Amatraxin. Those arrows, so you see that curtain over there? That's the curtain. Picture again, everybody has this sheet? Okay, so on picture 106, that curtain that you're looking at is a curtain that divides between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But if you notice that there is a wall there. So the Gemara suggests that, again, there was a wall that ultimately outlined, there was a wall that created an entranceway, a barrier wall, between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That wall was one Amma thick. One Amma in thickness. And thick, the thickness of the wall. Okay, you don't see the thickness over here, right? Because you're looking just at the surface, right? You're looking directly at the wall, so obviously you can't see this thickness in this picture. But if you were to go ahead and, let's say, move the curtain to the side and look at the side of that wall, you would notice that, again, there was an amma of thickness on that wall. So the Gemara says that was the setup for the Mikdash Rishon. Okay, so the Gemara says, and that wall was not there for the Mikdash Sheni, for the second base of Mikdash. It will say, why was the wall not there for the second base of Mikdash? This is very interesting. one of the major distinctions between the second base of Mikdash and the first base of Mikdash was height. Height. The first base, this first base of Mikdash was a much smaller structure, shorter structure, less height. The second base of Mikdash had towering ceilings. We still also remember how tall was the second base of Mikdash, right? The ulam was 40 amos high. The regular temple itself, that what we call the Kodesh, was 20 amos. Now, both say architecturally, you cannot make a 20 amma high wall with only 1 amma of thickness. One, that level of thickness can't support that height of a wall. So they had it. So they couldn't replicate this amatraxin in the second base Hamikdash. Take a look at the Rashi for just a moment. Amatraxin, kach nikres kosel mechitza. This was the name of the, literally, the wall of demarcation. Shehifsik b'mikdash rishon. So this was the name of the wall. This is the name of the wall, Amatraxin. This was the name of the wall in between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Shehifsik b'mikdash rishon, alav b'mikdash sheni, shehagavoa. I will say, Rashi says over here, mea. But if you look in the Mesorah Sashas, he changes mea to ultimately be mem, right? Mem amma. It was 40 amos high. Lo asu lefishay ovyeha ela amma. The eno yechola laamod begova arbaim mem amma. V'hosif alovya I efshar dechsiva kol bichsav miyad Hashem. I'll ask you, so let's listen to this. So you'll say to yourself, so why don't you just go ahead and what? What? Make a thicker wall. Make a thicker wall. So wait, what's the big deal? You can't make a thicker wall. Why? Because remember, one thing, you can make ceilings higher, but the dimensions of the base and base Hamikdash themselves are all divinely communicated. If you make a thicker wall than that, what does that mean? That means that you are encroaching on the dimensions of something else. So in the second temple, they cannot make a thicker wall. So let's go back to the Gemara. So now look at this. So the Gemara says, Avaba Mikdash Sheni. So remember, this is the Rabbanan. Remember, Rabbi Yossi is the one who says there's one curtain. How do we know there's one curtain? Because the pasuk says there's one curtain. So I want to say, no, Rabbi Yossi, what you're referring to over here is that pasuk refers to what happened in the Mishkan and what later happened in the first temple. Avah b'mikdash sheni, the second place of Mikdash, kevan de lo havi amatraxin. There was not, you could not build this one amma wall. Why couldn't you build the one amma wall? Again, because the height, the one amma thickness would not support such a height of a wall. And therefore what? U'b'mikdash rishon hu dahavi. It was only the first temple that they had the amatraxin. Now watch this. This tafchel hud rabbanon bikdushase. So we'll say, here's the interesting part. In the first base Hamikdash, what did you have? You had the amatraxin. The amatraxin was the one amma thick wall, which means the wall itself occupied an amma of space. Comes along second temple. We can't build the wall. We can't build the wall. Now what's the shaila? What's the status of that one amma of space? Is that amma of space kodesh or kodesh kodashim? Who does it belong to? So what happened? And therefore, the istafka of the rabbanon b'kedushase. The rabbis were not sure about the kedusha. And I will say, so you'll say, so what should you do? What should you do? Ask the Navi. What's the problem? Second base Hamikdash, there's no nevuah. Right? There's no one to ask. So what happens? You'll say, don't build such a high ceiling. Remember, understand something. We did not have full control over how the second base Hamikdash was built. There were many different interests within the second base Hamikdash. Herod comes a little bit later, but even earlier than Herod. Right? Remember, this was going to be a masterpiece of the Persian Median Empire as well. So it's not like we had so much input. We had input into certain dimensions. It's kind of like when you renovate your house. You know, you have very little input into that process, right? But exactly. So what happens? So therefore, the Rabbanon, the Chazal, we're not sure what do we do with the one amma of space over there. So ikilifnim ikilachut. So what do they do? So Rabbanon said, "There's no." So it's like a teiku. So what do you do with this? Rabbanon said, "Obviously, again, you can't say teiku because remember the stakes are very high. If you make a mistake, and you accidentally allocate that amma of space to Kodesh." When it really should be Kodesh Kadoshim. And what's going to happen? And a Kohen steps on that Am of Seis, what's going to happen? Boom, you're done. You're done because essentially you've just stepped into the Kodesh Kadoshim, you know, without permission. So what did they do? So they went ahead. Va'avud shtei parochos. So we'll say they had a very interesting approach. What did they do? They made a double curtain. And what was the area in between the curtain? That was the one Am of space. So the truth is, the only time anyone was ever going between those curtains was when? Was the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Therefore, again, pretty much what they ended up doing is, they ended up going ahead and essentially treating it like Kodesh HaKadoshim, without officially annexing it to the Kodesh HaKodeshim. By keeping it in between the two curtains, what they did is we play it safe. This way, no one during the rest of the year will ever access it. But on the other hand, in case it's not really part of the Kodesh HaKodeshim is still demarcated from it, how? With another curtain. But so that's, therefore...
You still have the status of that one Amma in the first place on it, I mean, you still have to figure out what it was.
No, you didn't, because the wall occupied it.
But was the curtain hung on the outside?
No. Those dimensions were divine. So the Ribono Shel Olam told us to put the wall there. Now the wall's not there. What's the status of the space?
But what's the status?
Who cares? God told you to put it there. Meaning it doesn't matter. Nobody's ever traversing that space except to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Meaning you're right. The Shaila is still there, but in the first place, it didn't matter. The Ribono Shel Olam said, put the wall there. We put the wall there. And the only time anybody was ever crossing that threshold was to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim anyway. So it never came up. Now it comes up because now I have to figure out where do I place the curtain. To which essentially Chazal said, you know what, place a double curtain. Essentially demarcate the space. So the Gemara goes back to Tana Rabbanan. So I will say, now listen to this. Now that's how the Rabbanan answer, that's how Tana Kana answers Rabbi Yossi. I will say, Rabbi Yossi still stands his ground. Now what Rabbi Yossi is going to do with the Amatraxin, we'll still have to see later on. So watch this. Now, this is amazing Braisa. Tana Rabbanan. So I'll say, now we're going to see, now just so you understand how scripted everything is on Yom Kippur, now we're going to chart the path of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. So remember again, amazing. He's holding again the Ketores in his left hand, the Machto, the fire pan on his right hand, and he's walking. How does he walk? Excuse me. Thank you. So we'll also listen to this. So the first opinion, Brian says, Bein HaMizbeach L'Menorah HaYimahalik Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, that he would walk between the Mizbeach and the Menorah. We'll say, look at picture 107. Okay? See, here you have it. Now, we'll say, if you'll notice again, right now, we're going to go with the opinion of the Rabbanon that there's a double curtain. Now, if you'll notice, so look at picture 107. So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Kohen Gadol is making the approach between the Mizbeach and the Menorah. That's where he's walking. Now, if you'll continue towards the Parochas, towards the curtain, you'll notice, by the way, that the Parochas has part of its end, the pinned end up. Of the curtain. It's not clear on the picture, but part of it is pinned up. They did that. That was not for the rest of the year. They did that dafka for Yom Kippur. Because obviously, Rabosai, again, those curtains would normally hang pretty much flush against the wall. So in order to allow the Kohen Gadol to be able to access the curtains, we'll see they actually pinned up both corners of both curtains. So that's what you're seeing over here. So, and I was, again, just one other piece over here, just to understand, directionally, just because we have to get our bearings straight over here, if you were walking towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you were walking in what direction? You were walking west. You were walking west. So remember again, so just if you look at picture 107 for just a moment, you're walking west. The menorah, again, is to the south. The Shulchan, which is on your right, is to the north, and the Mizbeach ultimately is to the east. Okay, so just we're getting our bearings here. This is going to be very important. So therefore, Rabbi Huda says the way the Kohen Gadol would approach the Kodesh HaKadoshim is he would walk in between the Mizbeach and the Menorah. So he's walking westward, obviously, because you have to get to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but he's walking towards the southwest side. Southwest side. Rabbi Meir says, no, Bein Shulchan L'Mizbeach. Rabbi Meir says, no, not true. Look at picture 108. Where is he walking? He's going to walk between the Shulchan and the Mizbeach. Okay. The Yeshomrim, others say, Bein Shulchan L'Kosel. No, others say, and this again, if you turn the page, this is picture, it would be 109, but the number is cut off. I'm sorry. It's the second picture on the top. It's on the top of the page there. Picture above 110. The Yeshomrim say that he walked in between the Shulchan and the Kosel. Right, so Bosai, remember, we know that the Shulchan was not flush against the wall of the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, according to this Yeshomer, he would go ahead and he would walk in between the Shulchan and the wall. So the Gemara says the following: Man Yeshomer, who is the opinion of the Yeshomer? Amar Rav Chista Rabbi Yosihi. It's Rabbi Yosi, because what did Rabbi Yosi say? The Amar Pischa B'tzafon Koi. Bosai, again, interesting enough, Rabbi Yosi says that the entranceway, the opening to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, was on the northern end. Rabbi Yossi, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Now remember, again, Rabbi Yossi is the opinion of our Mishnah. What does Rabbi Yossi say in the Mishnah? One curtain. Rabbi Yossi, I just want to point something out to you interesting over here. picture 109 is actually wrong. The curtain is actually pinned up in the wrong way. You can send a letter to the editor, right? It's actually, these pictures normally are excellent, but I don't know. Or maybe they're quoting someone else. I shouldn't say that. They're greater Talmid Chacham than I am. Maybe there's another Shita. So look at Rashi. Rabbi Yossi, Rashi says, "Da'amar b'masnisin lo haisa sham ela parochas achos." Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion who says that there was only one curtain. The Eitzel HaKosel HaTzafoni Haya Rosha Kafu Uprufa Bekeres Zahab. And remember, according to Rabbi Yossi, so again, the Kohen Gadol would approach in between the Shulchan and the wall on the northern side. Because remember, the Shulchan was on the northern side. On the northern side of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the curtain was pinned up. The curtain was pinned up, he says, Bekeres Zahab, with a golden hook. Klape Achutz. So therefore the Gemara is suggesting that the Yesh Omrim who says that the Kohen Gadol would approach on the northern side, he would go to the Kodesh HaKadoshim between the table and the wall, the curtain would be pinned up. Now Rabbi Yossi, what's interesting is according to Rabbi Yossi, if the curtain was pinned up, what does that mean? That means you could see directly into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which we'll discuss in just a little bit. Anybody could pin it up. Because remember, you're pinning it up from the outside. You're pinning it up from the outside. So the truth is, and remember again, according to Rabbi Yossi, you'd have to say, it would appear that according to Rabbi Yossi, probably the Amatraxel was probably included on the inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's what I'm guessing, because otherwise you wouldn't want to take that risk. So somebody would be pinning it up from the inside and would definitely not peer in. So we'll say, watch this. So let's go back there. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi, the Amr Pischa B'Tzafon Kai. Rabbi Huda said, Rabbi Huda Amr Lecha, Pischa B'Dorim Kai. Now also remember, what did Rabbi Huda say? Rabbi Huda said, the head of the coin approach the Kodesh HaKadoshim between the Mizbeach and the Menorah. Right, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the curtain was pinned up on the southern side, right? What we call southwest, on the southern side. Rabbi Meir Kiman Svirlo. Now, who does Rabbi Meir hold it? Because also remember, according to Rabbi Meir, you were approaching how this was picture 108 between the Shulchan and the Mizbeach, which would seem to indicate that where was that the curtain was pinned up, therefore on the northern side. Right, we'll call it on the right side, right on the northern side. Yeah. So Rabbi Meir commands you. Who does Rabbi Meir hold? Like, Ik Rabbi Huda Svirale Neil Rabbi Huda. See, because what's strange about Rabbi Meir is, Rabbi Meir on one hand is entering on the same side that Rabbi Yossi, that the Yesh Omrim is entering on, but on the other hand he's walking in between the Shulchan and the Mizbeach. So on one hand he sounds like Rabbi Huda in certain respects, in that he's walking by the Mizbeach. On the other hand, he sounds like Rabbi Yossi in certain respects because he's actually entering in on the right side, on the northern side. So who does Rabbi Meir hold like? Ik Rabbi Huda Svirale, if he was like Rabbi Huda, Nel Rabbi Huda, then go in like Rabbi Huda. Ik Rabbi, meaning go in, therefore, on the left-hand side, on the southern side. Ik Rabbi Yossi Svirale, and if he was like Rabbi Yossi, Nel Rabbi Yossi, well, say, had Rabbi Yossi go in. Rabbi Yossi went in between the Shulchan and the wall. Shulchan on the wall, going like that. Listen to this. Also, this is amazing. Really just amazing. I tell you, it's amazing. So he says, the Gemara says, Li'olam Rabbi Yossi. No, he holds like Rabbi Yossi. And that's why he's going in Rabbosai on the right-hand side, on the northern side. So he says, so why don't you go, like Rabbi Yossi says, between the Shulchan and the wall? Oh, V'amr L'cha, I tell you, Shulchanos Tzafon V'dorom Munachin Umifas Gilei Shulchan below Miss Ayale. Oh, I'll tell you why I both side. Because remember again, there's another piece here. In the Beis Hamikdash, this was true in the first Beis Hamikdash as well. There wasn't just one Shulchan. We learned about this. Shlomo HaMelech already in the first temple made 10 additional Shulchanos. If you take a look at picture 110, comes along Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir will say like this, you know what? I would look like Rabbi Yossi. But there's a problem with Rabbi Yossi Shita. What's the Rambam saying? Although the primary Shulchan was not flush against walls, 2.5 amas from the wall, so there was room for the Kohen to walk between the wall and the Shulchan, the additional 10 Shulchanos were arranged how? First of all, from north to south. Remember, the Shulchan is against the northern wall, from north to south, and not only that, they were flush against the wall. Which means what? There was no room for the Kohen Gadol to walk. So says Rabbi Meir, I agree with Rabbi Yossi, but Rabbi Yossi, I don't know what you're doing about the 10 Shulchanos. After all, again, so says Rabbi Meir, therefore, according to me, the only way for the Kohen Gadol to access the right-hand side of the parochas, which again is the northern side entrance of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, is how? To walk between the Mizbeach and the Shulchan. Because you can't, although you can walk between the primary Shulchan and the wall, the other 10 Shulchanos are flush against the northern wall, and you can't walk that way. Our other possibility is the Olam Mizrachu Marav Munachin. Or maybe not. It may be, maybe in fact, the walls were, maybe the Shulchanos were in fact arranged on a north-south, on an east-west axis. If you look at picture 111, Rabosai, so again, remember, 110 has the Shulchanos, first of all, arranged in two rows of five, right? Mm. Two rows, ultimately, from north to south. If 111 says, no, maybe the tables were actually arranged from west to east, or from east to west. And Rabosai, and maybe, in fact, there was room. Maybe they weren't flush against the wall and there was room. So why, according to Rabbi Meir, would the Kohen Gadol not walk right? I'm sorry. Therefore, it goes again, if they're arranged from east to west and there is room between the Shulchan and the walls, so why not walk straight? To which he answers, Umishum Shechina Lav Orach Ara, top of Mondays, Lemeo Lehedja. It is not Bakabadik to make a beeline for the Kodesh HaKadoshim. When you approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you have to do so with reverence and to just walk in a straight line. I will say, what's the chab with walking in a straight line? Look at Rashi. Lemeya lehedja, tap Rashi and beis amad alif. Leilech, we're just going to do two more lines. Leilech eitzel hakosel hatzafoni kol orach hahechal. V'chol sha'a. So we'll say, remember, this is Rabbi Meir according to, and Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi agree. According to Rabbi Yossi, how many curtains are there? One curtain, which means, remember, that what? When this curtain is pinned up, what do you see? You see directly into the Kodesh HaKadosh. Rabbi Meir says, you know what? It's not appropriate to walk into a straight line from the Kodesh into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And the whole time, what are you looking at? You're looking at the Kodesh HaKadosh. Obviously, you'll say, maybe look down. Just remember, the Kohen Gadol has got to be careful. Why? Because he's also holding coals and ketores, neither of which he is permitted to spill. So says Rabbi Meir, again, to walk, to make a beeline, to walk straight to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the whole time your eyes look at the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He says again, and the whole time you're looking, your eyes are getting benefit from the Holy of Holies. Because you also remember, again, this is all predicated on many things. Rabbi Meir says, I hold like Rabbi Yossi, who A, holds that there's one curtain, and I also hold like Rabbi Yossi that you should approach from the southern end, from the northern end. From the northern end, but again, when the curtain is folded up, lemaisa, it's not bakavadik to look straight into the Kodesh HaKadosh. So therefore, what does Rabbi Meir suggest? Rabbi Meir suggests walk in a diagonal, essentially. So therefore, walk in between the mizbeach and the shulchan, and this way, I will say, what does that avoid? That avoids looking into the Kodesh HaKadosh. The only time you'll see the Kodesh HaKadosh is essentially when? Pretty much when you're ready to enter. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi, I said, what does Rabbi Yossi say to this? Because also remember, in Rabbi Yossi's model, remember, how many curtains are there?
One.
And it's pinned up. It's pinned up, which means, and according to Rabbi Yossi, how are you entering into the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Straight line. You're walking between the Shulchan and the wall. So I, Rabbi Yossi, you are walking straight into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And the whole time you're looking into the Kodesh HaKadosh, we'll listen to this answer. So why, according to Rabbi Yossi, is that not a lack of kavod? Listen to how beautiful this is. Rabbi Yossi, Amar Lecha, Chavivi Yisrael. You know what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves the Jewish people. And what's the raya? Shelo Hitzrichon HaKosov L'Shaliach. That God doesn't require us to have an agent. And I will say, what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Rabbi Yossi, Amar Lecha, Chavivi Yisrael, Shelo Hitzrichon HaKosov L'Shaliach. We'll say, you know what the amazing part is? We don't need agents. We can each daven for ourselves. Whatever we need, we'll say, you know, this was one of the big tainus that the Vilna Gaon had on Chassidus. When Chassidus started, he felt that Chassidus placed too much of an emphasis on the tzaddik. Right? You need the tzaddik to do this. And the tzaddik. So what Rabbi Yossi is saying over here, is the beautiful part is we each have the ability to daven for ourselves. Shne Emar, he calls the pasuk from Malachim Aleph, Asher Yedun Ish Nega Levavo. Every person knows the affliction of his heart. Uperes Kapav El Abayis Hazeh, and he should literally outstretch his palms to this hand. Shlomo Aleph was saying, we built the Beis Hamikdash. You know what it's for? It's not for you to go to someone else to daven for you. Daven for yourself. We can take care of beautiful parties. I don't need a shaliach for my relationship with God. All I need is myself and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Rabbi Yossi says like this. It's very interesting. So Rabbi Yossi says, Rabbi Yossi's argument is like this. During the, right, normally we say, I don't need a shaliach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves me so much that that I don't need an agent to do my spiritual work on my behalf. Even though I'm imperfect, even though I'm flawed, even though I'm compromised, God loves me so much that I can have a direct communication and direct relationship. So on the one day of the year when I do need a shaliach, and the one day of the year where I can't do it myself, I need the Kohen Gadol, how much more so that shaliach is beloved before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I don't need a shaliach the rest of the year because I am beloved, the one day I do need a shaliach, how beloved that shaliach is, and therefore what? It's okay for the shaliach to make a beeline to the Kodesh HaKadosh. It's okay. God is more than happy to see him. God is more than happy to have him in his home. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is more than happy for him to look upon the Kodesh HaKadoshim for as long as he wants. Chavivin Yisrael. There's such an incredible display of love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for the Kohen Gadol, who represents Klal Yisrael. That interestingly enough, you know, when you love someone, all of the laws, sometimes like the formalities are dispensed with. So whereas Rabbi Yossi says, you can't just walk into the Kodesh HaKadosh. Excuse me, Rabbi Meir says, you have to go down and you can't look to the altar. Rabbi says, what are you talking about? This is a day of love. This is a day of connection. This is the one day where actually you can make a beeline for the Kodesh HaKadoshim and there's no lack of respect. I will say one more line. Rabbi Yehuda, I, according to Rabbi Yehuda, nami ne'al bei menorah l'kosa. So I will say, now the Gemara goes back and asks Rabbi Yehuda. So I will say, here's what we have so far. So remember, we've got two out of our three shitas taken care of. We've got, again, Rabbi Yossi. According to Rabbi Yossi, how are you entering into the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Right? Straight line. Where are you walking between? Between the Shulchan and the wall. And remember, one curtain. So yes, you're looking at the Kodesh HaKadoshim the whole time. Not a problem. Kodesh Baruch Hu loves you. Rabbi Meir, how are you walking? How are you walking? Again, he agrees with Rabbi Yossi that you're going in on the northern side. There's only one curtain. But he's going to go a diagonal. He's going to go between the Shulchan and the Mizbeach Sos to avoid looking at the Kodesh HaKadoshim the whole time. How did Rabbi Yehuda have me going in? Right? Rabbi Yehuda said, other side. Remember, this was on the southern side between what? Mizbeach HaMenorah. The Gemara says, I don't say Rabbi Yehuda, nami ne'al be'menorah l'kosel. What, now, I will say again, remember, Rabbi Yehuda is holding that there are two curtains. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, why even have to walk in a diagonal? Why don't you just go between the menorah and the wall? Yeah. Right? After all, again, there's room. And it's okay, because what are you going to see ahead of you? Curtain, the second curtain. Remember, the first curtain is pinned up. But you'll see the second curtain there. So why don't you just walk in a straight line? The Gemara answers, Meshachri, excuse me, Be'kosel, Naminel, Be'menorah, the Kosel, Meshachri, Mane. I will say, interestingly enough, often the wall behind the menorah was blackened, was dirty. Why? Because it had some of the residue of the soot. So therefore, again, remember, what is the Kohen Gadol wearing on Yom Kippur? He's wearing pure white. So the Gemara says it wouldn't look nice if the Kohen Gadol enters into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with his clothing at all dirtied. And therefore, again, we don't want him walking in between the menorah and the wall. We'd rather have him go around the menorah on the other side. Look at Rashi, Meshachri Maneh. His clothing could become blackened from the flame of the menorah, which sometimes put a little bit of dirt on the wall. So as to avoid any type of soiling of the Kohanic vestments right before he's about to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he takes a little bit of detour between the Mizbeach and the menorah.
All right. Number one.